time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Good morning. This is Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker Tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim Tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You can also hear us on the internet at WSMNradio.com, www.WSMNradio.com. Please tune in if you're having trouble hearing us on the radio. So, Sonia.
Hitnachalut.
What is that, a Hebrew word?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Hitnachalut is coming from the word nachala, which means estate, property. Itnachalut, it's actually a community established on a certain property.
Mm-hmm.
So we are always saying that Eretz Israel, the land of Israel, it's our ancestor nachala, it's our ancestor estate or property, which have been transferred generations after generation to us.
Amen. That's all I can say to that.
So, and it's for thousands of years. This is the beauty of the thing.
Right. It's an inheritance that we have.
Yes.
We have inherited.
And we are living exactly in the same place. So it's
right. And it's funny to say, I know that there are those who might think, what do you mean you? It's your inheritance. You know, we as Jews, as Jewish people, as a Jewish nation, and as individuals.
It's not only this. It's not mine. It's even not my
personal
kids,
property. Right?
Exactly. But it's for our generation that will come forever. That's it. Let's go.
And we're talking about property because our guest today is a wonderful, wonderful woman. Her name is Sandra Oster Baras. She grew up in a Jewish Orthodox home in America. She completed her BA in history and English at Barnard College in New York. She obtained her JD at Columbia University's School of Law. And in 1984, after practicing law in New York for a short time, Sandra moved to Israel, where she continued her legal career after being accepted at the Israeli bar. Today, Sandra lives in a town in Israel called Karnei Shomron, which we'll hear a little bit about. She's an active spokesperson for the communities of Judea, Samaria, and Gaza, also known in Israel as Aza. She is the director of the Israel Office of CFOIC, Christian Friends for Israeli Communities, which is the only Christian organization to focus exclusively on the communities in the heartland of biblical Israel. She coordinates much of CFOIC's Heartlands community support programs worldwide, where they also have branches in addition to Israel and the U.S. They have branches in Germany and Holland and more to come. And she will be speaking on May 15th in Fitchburg, Mass. At the Faith Christian Church on Sunday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m. We'll mention that again. But right now, we want to go right to a pre-recorded interview with Sandra. This is part one, and we will hear part two next week. Sandra Oster Baras.
Boker Tov.
Boker Tov. How is life in Israel?
Beautiful weather today.
Wonderful. We're still having rain. But let's get started. We wanted to know, first of all, tell us where you're living in Israel and how long you've been living there.
Well, I live in a community called Karnei Shomron. It is a town in Samaria. And I have been living here in this town since 1987, and I've been living in Israel since 1984.
Beautiful place to live. I'm coming also from Samaria, and I know exactly what a beautiful view you have from your own living room.
It is beautiful.
And, well, what brought you to Israel in the first place?
Well, I've been a Zionist ever since I've been a kid, and actually I'm an Orthodox Jew, and I've always been an Orthodox Jew, and went to Jewish day schools. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and for anyone who studies the Tanakh, who reads, you know, where the Jewish people began, the land of Israel features there right from the beginning. It's very hard for me to understand how anybody isn't a Zionist. And I was lucky enough to be born after the State of Israel was established, when the only thing you needed to do to go to Israel was to buy a plane ticket. And in fact, when you make Aliyah, the government of Israel buys your plane ticket for you. Of course,
yay,
a one-way ticket.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And so it was just a no-brainer. Since I was a kid, in fact, I was driving my parents crazy. I would say, why aren't we moving to Israel? Let's move to Israel. And my parents would always give me these practical answers like, oh, you have to make a living and you have to know the language. Well, because I was privileged enough to go to a Jewish school from a very young age, I knew the language. So I figured, what the heck, I can make a living if I know the language, and that's it, here we are.
good reasoning, I'd say. So now you have an organization called Christian Friends of Israeli Communities. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, it's actually an organization that was founded by Christians. I happened to be there at the beginning. And it was really, I for many years already had been involved both in volunteer positions and professionally, various ways advocating for the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria, what are commonly referred to as the settlements. And in that context, I met over the years here and there Christians who, you know, would be interested in what we were doing and would be very supportive. Their support for what we were doing derived from their biblical connection. They read the same Bible we do, and they take it very literally, and in the same way that I believe that God gave this land to the Jewish people, they have the same belief. So it was really very natural for them to be excited with what we were doing, the idea of the Jewish people coming back to the land of Israel after almost 2,000 years, and then more specifically coming to resettle the heartland of Israel, the center of Israel, the places that feature most prominently in the Bible. And so at some point there was a family who was so excited by what we were doing. At that time I was involved doing similar work with Jews in the United States, primarily advocating what we're doing here to them. And they said, we need to do something like this for Christians, at which point we said, well, okay, we don't know that much about Christians, but you do, so get it started. And it started as a very small family project, and I was basically providing the information, connecting them with people, communities, etc. in Israel. And at some point they said to me, you know, why don't you open an Israel office? We'll fund it.
Nice.
And that's how it began.
How could you refuse?
Right, and that's how it began. And of course, since then it has grown, and we have grown out of the little family project, and we really are a broad-based organization that is indeed a partnership between Christians and Jews, and not just Christians in the United States, but Christians from all over the world.
Sandra, what was the motivation, the main motivation to organize this group?
Well, you know, it is no secret that one of the dirtiest words that you will find in the press and anywhere else when it comes to Israel is the settlements. In fact, it's a word itself I don't like, because it's a word that has been manipulated to create a negative impression of what we're doing here. If you have the word settlement referring usually to illegal or illegitimate presence, colonial presence, or a temporary presence, and we, of course, here have built towns and cities and villages. But we have to recognize the fact that so many people all over the world do not understand why we're here and what our legitimacy is and being here. The Christian world, on the other hand, particularly those within the Protestant world, people who refer to themselves as Bible-believing Christians, these are people who are very willing and able to understand and appreciate why we are here. And in a time when we have so few audiences that appreciate what we're doing and are willing to support us, I believe that we must cultivate a friendship and a relationship with Christian audiences who do have that understanding. And that really is the motivation, because we need friends. First of all, Israel in general needs friends, and the evangelical Christian world has become faithful friends of Israel in general. And specifically, our little cause, which actually is, if you ask me, a monumental cause, settling the heartland of Israel, we must have friends.
I would like very much for you to tell not only why historically it is our place, not only by the religion it is our place, but also strategically. Why this is the heartland and why we should stay there and continue our building there.
Well, first of all, I think the biblical issue is the foundation. The Palestinians very often talk about, you'll hear them saying, why did the Jews go back to Poland and to Germany where they came from? Why, just because the Jews were massacred in the Holocaust, why do we have to suffer?
Excuse me one second. One second. I want to tell you that I was literally invited to get out from my homeland and have been told when I was 15, get out from here and go to Palestine. And it was 1974. Excuse me that I interrupt you.
No. That's important. But I would like to, you know, we know the truth that this is, you know, but let's take their accusations seriously for one moment. Okay, they're saying, just because Hitler murdered 6 million Jews and we had all these Jewish refugees, why do the Palestinians have to suffer? Now, the truth of the matter is, if the Jews were coming to a land that they had no connection to, the Palestinians would have a point. Just because I, as a Jewish person, have been persecuted in North Africa or in Europe, why does that mean I have to throw someone off their land? But if that land belongs to me, if I am returning to the land that was mine from biblical times to today and where Jews have always lived, where we, if the reason there aren't Jews, more Jews here today, or there weren't more Jews here 100 years ago, is because we were driven from the land, then, of course, we have a whole different situation.
Driven from the land many times over, not just
many
once.
Many times, absolutely. So you have to begin with what is our title deed to this land. And that title deed goes back biblically and historically for centuries. But let's talk about where we are today. The world did recognize that Israel has a right to exist. And the state of Israel was actually established in 1948. The Arabs did not recognize our right to exist and immediately launched a war. At the end of that war, 1949, we did not have Judea and Samaria. Now, at that time, we didn't hear any Arabs saying, ah, we have Judea and Samaria, we'll have a Palestinian state there, the Jews will be happy where they are, we're going to sing Kumbaya and be friends. No! They have been attacking us ever since.
Can I intercede for a minute?
Sure.
I know that in the early 1900s, the Mufti or whatever you will call him, it's written in the Quran. He said that, you know, this land belongs to the Jews. The Arabs actually said that in the early 1920s. So all of a sudden they're changing their minds.
Right, absolutely, and indeed you'll find in early documents, for example, the Arabs referring to the Temple Mount as the Temple Mount. It's only about 15 years ago that they suddenly realized if they call it the Temple Mount, that means it's recognizing there's a temple, and now all of a sudden they start referring it to Haram al-Sharif, and you'll hear them saying, well, if there ever was a temple, we don't think there was. Again, this is all very new, and it's very politically motivated. But let's get back to the strategic issues. The area of Judea and Samaria is the center of the country. It is also geographically a mountainous region that controls the coastal area. The entire time from 1948 to 1967, Arab control of this area endangered Israel, and in fact, in 1967, Jordan attacked Israel from these mountains. So when we first came into this area, it was in response to an attack. Since then, the danger of Arabs controlling this area and the kind of damage that they can cause to the rest of Israel has only grown. And we have seen, for example, for the past 5 years, since Israel unilaterally withdrew from the Gaza Strip, what we have gotten in return was ongoing missiles and rockets, and the capability and range of those missiles grows every month. So, and from that perspective as well, if we are not sitting here in Judea and Samaria, and the Arabs are, they will destroy Israel.
And they say it out loud. I mean, it's not a secret. That's their goal.
Absolutely.
And also another point that I would like to mention is the existing aquifers that we have in exactly the same place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We here, sitting under where I live, is part of a water source that provides one third of Israel's water today.
Now, I'm going to backtrack for a second because our listening audience may not be aware of exactly when we speak of Judea and Samaria, where that actually is. And you've mentioned it's central, it's in central Israel, but can you give a few more details about where that is for our listeners?
Okay, well, first of all, it's an enormous area. It reaches down from about an hour drive south of Hebron. In the south is about, let's say an hour and a half, 2 hours drive south of Jerusalem, and going north almost to the Galilee. It is an area that is about 40 miles wide, and it's all of Israel, from the Mediterranean to the Jordan River, is only a bit over 50 miles wide. So we have an enormous, enormous area that takes up not just the center of the country, but it takes up most of the country. Israel, before 1967, was only about 9 miles wide at its narrowest point, right near Netanya. Mm-hmm. So it is that area. It's an area that's frequently referred to as the West Bank, because that's the name Jordan gave it when it illegally occupied the area. And it's just there in the middle. You see it every time you see a map of Israel.
The 1967 borders have been called by Abba Even the Auschwitz borders.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking about, actually, since you brought it up, when people are speaking about now a peace plan that would go back to the 1967 borders, can you define that for our listeners?
That's exactly what we're talking about. I think Abba Evan's statement of Auschwitz borders explains that. We're talking about an area, the coastal plain of Israel, would be only 10 to 15 miles wide in quite a large part of the area. And that's an area where 70% of Israel's population resides. This is where Tel Aviv is. This is on the Mediterranean. We're talking about when Abba Even made that statement, the Arabs did not have missiles and rockets, and therefore the dangers that they posed to us was far less critical than the dangers they pose to us today.
And of course, then, if we go back, then it excludes all of Judea and Samaria.
Of course.
And this mountainous range that where they can again come and easily, essentially, destroy Israel.
Right. And from what I understand, for example, there was a New York Times article last week that indicated where Obama was going on his view of a so-called peace plan in Israel, and that he is talking about complete withdrawal to the 1967 borders, which means 320,000 people would be driven from their homes.
Again.
Yes, in order to find out how many people will be reportedly with the United States, you only need to multiply this by 50. And you will get the numbers. Tell us what this means spiritually and religiously living in this heartland.
Well, for me, it's a combination of I look at the spiritual and the historical as really very much intertwined. I know that where I live, and just a short drive from where I live, these are the mountains that Abraham walked
Right.
This is where God first spoke to Abraham and said, I will give this land to your children. So I know that as a historical fact, but as a religious person, when I also know that God repeated this promise over and over, and then promised that despite dispersions and exile, God would bring his people back to the land, and I see this happening, that we now, just yesterday, I drove up to that very mountain where God spoke to Abraham, and here we are. There's a Jewish community there now. There are Jewish communities in that entire area. To me, that is an incredible miracle that the Jewish people have come back to the land. And for me to be part of that is for me to be part of Jewish history in the most profound spiritual way that I can imagine.
Exactly.
Talk about coming back to your roots.
Yes, absolutely.
And what is the feelings about, looking around and see how the Middle East, it's such an unstable place. I'm referring to Egypt, I'm referring to Syria, I'm referring to Libya, Iraq, a little bit of Iran, which we don't know exactly what's going on there. I am speaking also about Lebanon, which is it's only a picture of a country. It's not an independent country. It's under Syrian and Iran desire what they were going to do. How do you think that Israel will be able to make any peace process with the neighbors?
Well, I think one of the things that, last night on television here in Israel, they interviewed the high-ranking general in the IDF who went into politics. And he himself was born in Poland and ended up being like a baby, a child survivor of Auschwitz, which is really, an amazing
thing. Unusual, yeah.
And he said that the purpose of Israel, the objective of Israel is not peace. He says it's very nice if we have peace. He says, but the objective of Israel is to ensure the survival of the Jewish people.
Amen.
If we have peace along the way, that's very nice. But that's not our objective. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to keep that in mind when we view all of the so-called peace processes that have been thrown our way. One of the ironies of all of this, of course, what's happening today, is that all of these people throughout the last decade who have ensured, just sign this piece of paper, just go with this plan, and everything will be hunky-dory, assume a stability in the Middle East that has never existed. We now see country after country where government is falling, where people like Mubarak, who was considered the most powerful, important leader, most stable leader in the Middle East, is gone. No one knows what's going to happen to the peace treaty that was signed between Egypt and Israel. There have already been a number of statements coming out of the temporary government in Egypt that they are interested in repudiating that treaty. So when we take into account our needs, we cannot rely on any of these neighbors, not to guarantee our peace, not to guarantee that they won't go to war. So for us to give up an area that is strategically so important, assuming that Jordan will never be an enemy, assuming that, Syria has always been an enemy, if today, for example, and this is really bringing it home, look at what's happened all over the Middle East. If today there was a Palestinian state in Judea and Samaria, we would see, if by some means that Palestinian state would not yet be controlled by Hamas, it would definitely be controlled by Hamas today, because these riots are contagious.
Exactly.
And the Palestinian Authority is a dictatorship, and the people want Islamic extremism, and that's what they would get. And then where would Israel be?
And not to mention that essentially Hamas and Hezbollah, all of these people, organizations, are essentially proxies of Iran. And I don't know if I'm correct, but I would assume that, I'm assuming that there's a power struggle going on in the Arab world that we are sort of caught in the middle of.
Oh, exactly. And we have to realize that who it is we're fighting with. It has been very convenient for Iran to kind of hide behind the Hamas. They're not even hiding that well. They make their statements over there. They go ahead with their nuclear program. And then they have Hamas and Hezbollah to do their dirty work. And there's Hamas in Judea and Samaria. And the only reason we are not seeing the same kind of violence coming out of Judea and Samaria is because the IDF is also in Judea and Samaria and is arresting and stopping Hamas people every single day.
This is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You're listening to Israel is Real, www.israelisraelnh.com, I-S-R-A-E-L, Israel.com. Wouldn't it be awesome if over 100,000 people, well, even millions, knew about your business, product, or service? Wouldn't it be even more amazing if you or your business were helping to stop the hatred and the terrorism by supporting the good news about Israel? You can do this by sponsoring a Hebrew Word, maybe a Torah portion, or even a weekly Israel is Real show. So take out your checkbook now and make a donation, advertise, sponsor a show, or even have us read a greeting on a special occasion. By supporting Israel is Real, you make a world of difference. Yes, by loving Israel, you will make the world a better place. So write a check now to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Again, write the check to Absolute Broadcasting. Send it to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. If you want to know more about rates and any other information, visit our website at IsraelIsraelNH.com, I-S-R-A-E-L-I-S-R-E-A-L, NH.com.
Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? To receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision's education activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.newhampshirenh4israel.org.
The patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main & Associates, a local firm with a global practice, is pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, also on the web at www.vernmain.com. For professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters, contact the legal specialists at Vern Main & Associates at their offices at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire, or on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com.
Have you heard the buzz? Rachel Music is touching hearts of listeners all around the world. To hear Rachel's unique sound and to book Rachel to perform for you live, go to www.rachelmusic.net. That's www.rahelmusic.net.
Dr. James Haas of Vanguard Dental Group in Derry, New Hampshire, is a board-certified pediatric dentist who is extremely talented at putting anxious children at ease so they have a positive dental experience. Dr. Jim Haas specializes in treating children with special emotional or physical needs by way of sedation and operating room dentistry. Dr. Jim Haas is currently accepting new patients. Your child will enjoy dental visits with Dr. Jim Haas. Call 603-434-1586 or visit www.vanguarddentalgroup.com to learn more about Dr. Jim Haas. We're listening to the music of Yonatan Miller, his new CD, Jewish Soul, which can be found at www.cdbaby.com/Yonatan Miller. And we're speaking today with Sondra Osterbaras on Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk.
Few questions. When Jordan and Israel signed the peace agreement in October 1994, Why do you think Jordan didn't demand at that time to have Judea and Samaria back? Or to have it at all, not back. But
well,
the
Palestinian people have turned into a very, well, they've kind of always been like this, but they've been a very unruly, dangerous group of people for a long time, ever since Arafat kind of led this band of warriors and called themselves a nation.
By the way, were also kicked out of Jordan in their time.
Right. Oh, well, Jordan
and many other
massacred 10,000 Palestinian Arabs.
In one week, in 1970, the Black September.
Absolutely. And so Jordan has never loved the Palestinians. They were very happy to control the area when they thought it was a matter of giving themselves more territory and that they can control the Palestinians. They realized today they can't control them. They don't want anything to do with them. Egypt doesn't want to have anything to do with them. They're just trouble. They're trouble for any government who wants to be stable. Now, of course, what is happening today in both Jordan and in Egypt, and I think Jordan has to also be watched very carefully, is the same sort of unstable forces are working against the governments there.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they're connected or not, nobody really knows yet. But, for example, in Egypt, the Islamic, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the most organized group in Egypt today, and a group that is widely believed to that will gain tremendous prominence and influence in Egypt after Mubarak. This is a group that Mubarak fought tooth and nail, and they are connected to Hamas. Mm. It's the same people.
Yeah. Many of these people that they call rebels or militants or whatever they decide to label them as are all essentially from the same brand. What our listeners perhaps or the Western mindset is trying to sell us as sort of a peaceful replacement for the current dictatorship is not exactly so.
Well, first of all, just look at what's actually happening in Egypt today. There is no democracy in Egypt. There's military rule. So if Obama was so eager for Mubarak to leave right away so there could be democracy. Well, he left right away and then got military rule. The other thing is, I think it's important to realize that many of the people who were protesting in Egypt were people who were looking for more freedom. They don't love Israel, but they want more freedom and they want better economy. But they don't have an organized plan. And typically in situations like that, where you have a popular uprising, they know what they don't want, but they're not sure what they want. And the first group, or the most organized group, that comes in with an agenda, they win. And that's the danger. You have a lot of people out there that really, they don't either, in any case, anti-Semitism is rife in Egypt. So no one is going to care if a group comes to power in Egypt that hates Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That will be popular because that has already been the popular sentiment. But it can be much worse than that. It can end up being a full, Islamic fundamentalist regime. And if they promise economic prosperity and order, people will take it.
And not only this, when we have the Treaty of Peace, we sign with Anwar Sadat. And my feeling in this particular time was that he was really keen in his desire for peace. Mubarak was never a very friendly partner to Israel, and he never put invested in educational peace and to learn his next generation that Israel is a neighbor and have a legitimacy. And those are the fruits. Today,
exactly.
Those are exactly the fruits that he didn't invest in them.
Right. No, but I think Mubarak was a pragmatist. I think what he was looking for was stability. He didn't like Israel, but he recognized that war and terrorism is not good for anybody. And that the same terrorists who want to topple Israel want to topple his own government.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was more an arrangement that suited the interests of both countries than a warm peace, because he never loved Israel.
Right. Right.
Now, I wanted to... I want to get to the Christians, but questions keep popping into my mind, and I'd like to sort of get away from politics for a minute, and let's talk about Judea and Samaria itself. How is it today as a thriving, flourishing region? What's going on in a positive light? Let's hear all about the good things that are going on in the region.
Okay, well, as I mentioned before, there are approximately 320,000 Jews living in the area. That's a lot. And we have communities of every size. We have the bigger cities like Ariel and Male Adumim.
Yay, we're both, Sonia and I, both from both of those places.
Oh, okay.
Sonia from Ariel, and I'm from Male Adumim.
Okay. Then, of course, there's the mid-side places like where I live in Karnei Shomron and Alfei Menashe, Kedumim, and many, many, Efrat, and many other places like that. And then there's a lot of smaller communities. And what people very often forget or are not aware of is what we've essentially done when we talk about communities. It really is a word that encompasses all of these places, whether small, medium, or large, because what we have built are places where people care about one another. Even in the larger communities, in the larger towns and cities, these are made up of people that are very neighborhood-oriented, community-oriented. There's a great deal of self-help. The populations in the communities can be very heterogeneous. They can be more homogeneous. It depends. We have religious and secular. We have traditional. We have all kinds of people. But what makes our communities unique is that you find a much higher level of solidarity with one another, caring for one another. It's an atmosphere that you don't find anywhere else in Israel. And I would say Israel as a country is far more community-oriented than the United States. But even as compared to the other communities in Israel, we have a far more, I don't know, I would use the Yiddish word Hamish. It's a Hamish place. People feel at home here.
It's very warm and comforting, I guess, would be Hamish.
Yeah.
Warm and welcoming, comforting.
Well, it's homey. It's homey. That's what the word literally means. It's feeling like home. And you will come into a place like this, and the beautiful gardens and trees and people and lots and lots of kids. It's and beautiful. The hills, the mountains, it's absolutely beautiful.
And not to... we know that the Fogel family, who was recently murdered, was a tragedy, a horrible tragedy, and I don't want to, you know, say devalue that, but I do want to, on the other hand, say that when you're speaking about community, how the community came forth and has come forth and continues to come forth to support the family, the remaining three members of the family. Uh-huh. And even, you know, the head of the supermarket chain saying that, you know, he will be providing food for them until the last, you know, the youngest child is 18. I mean, where do you see that anywhere else? You know, it's very heartwarming, and you say heartland, heartwarming, you know. This is what it's about.
Absolutely.
This is really what it's about.
Absolutely.
And oddly enough, I was just speaking to someone, I don't remember who exactly, but recently, just this week, about the importance of community in our lives. And how we don't often find that in America. It's very difficult to find such a situation where, God forbid, something terrible like that should happen. The community might come forth for a short period immediately following an incident, but uh-huh. not an ongoing until, you know, for 20 years down the line or uh-huh. more.
No, it is special. And I think there's a great, I think that terrorist attack in Etam are really did strike a chord throughout the country. And people really have come forward. And unfortunately, there's another family now mourning a murdered son in nearby, in Elon Moreh, right. when this group of Hasidim
yes.
Went in to pray in the tomb of Joseph. These are very spiritual sorts, not necessarily the most practical types, but have absolutely no political affiliation whatsoever. They just want to go and pray, and they had been going and praying regularly in that place, and the Palestinians knew it, and yet they opened fire and murdered a 24-year-old young man who grew up in Elon Moreh, and there's a family there who is mourning.
I'm sure that the Palestinians recognize that this is something that happens all the time on a regular basis, that Jews are going to pray at this particular tomb of Joseph, and I don't think that they would have thought it was any unusual activity, really.
And it was members of the police that shot. It wasn't just, some terrorist brigand coming out of nowhere. This was the Palestinian Authority officials. So this is very suspicious in our minds. And, I believe this requires a response of some sort. This is not something that can be, just brushed under the rug.
Right. I want to speak about response and all of that maybe in our next, this is a two-part interview, so we're going to speak and continue with you in the next show as well. I'd like to turn now to the support of the Christian community and sadly, versus the lack of support of the Jewish community, if that's possible to speak about. I don't know if we want to speak about that, but let's go with the Christians. What brings them to this? As you said, there's a biblical connection and a true belief that this is the Jewish homeland, and it's not the first time I've heard it. Uh-huh. Let's speak a little bit about the Christians and what's bringing them. And I know that just recently for the Easter celebration, there was a large, super large group of Christians in Jerusalem celebrating now. What's this all about?
Well, first of all, Christians, their faith is something that grew out of Judaism. It departed from Judaism, but it grew out of it. So the majority of their Bible is actually our Bible. They add some, the New Testament at the end, but they're reading the same Bible we're reading, and they believe it very deeply and sincerely. So for the Christians that I'm working with, it's just so simple. You know, God said this land is belongs to Israel. God said he would return the Jewish people to the land after a period of exile. He's doing that. We as believing Christians, if we want to get on God's good side, we need to be on the good side of what he's doing in the land. It's as simple as that. And it's actually quite refreshing, I think, to work with people like that who just, don't get bogged down with all of the other kinds of information that's floated out there in the press and things that are so distorted. And they just look at it from the most simple way. This land belongs to the Jewish people. What about that is so complicated?
And they're fearless. They look beyond the conflict, as we all should, and say, this is a beautiful land. This is a land where Jews should be, and for the sake of the rest of the nations as well.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely, and I think there are also people, being religious people, similar to religious people, Jews and Christians, everybody, the issue of right and wrong is very important. And so you see today so much of this moral equivalence and political correctness that has turned the concept of right and wrong absolutely on its head. These people are saying, no, there's a right and a wrong here. You know, we're here in Judea and Samaria because we were attacked in a war that we didn't ask to fight. Where else do you have a situation where someone would ask the victors to leave the land?
Right.
I mean, that's just not right.
Right.
It's that kind of argument that they're going to say, and you have today people turning that on their head, and they're talking about the poor Palestinians. Well, the poor Palestinians may be poor, but it's irrelevant to the issue. And you have to ask, well, why are the Palestinians in a bad situation? Who caused it? Well, it wasn't Israel. If Israel was able to solve it, it would have gone away a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's these sorts of things that you have people that are just willing to look at the issue clearly, not get muddled by all these extraneous issues, and say, no, we're standing with Israel. And it's very important for us that we have these friends.
Sondra, We've basically come to the end of our time for this particular part one of Sondra Osterbaras. And so we need to close now, and we're going to invite our listeners to listen again next week. But before we do that, can you please tell our listeners how they can learn more about Judea and Samaria and your organization?
Well, go on the web. We're at cfoic.com and get all the information there. And our U.S. office has a toll-free number, which is 800-647-3344.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that. That's cfoic.com. That's Christian Friends of Israeli Communities, if you want to remember that, cfoic.com. And the 800 number is 800-647-3344. And Sandra, you'll be coming also on a speaking tour, and we'll let our listeners know about that as well. And thank you for speaking to us today, and we're going to continue our interview with you and next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark your calendars to attend the Night to Honor Israel, Sunday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the Faith Christian Church, 40 Boutelle Street, in Fitchburg, Mass. There's no cost, but a free will offering will be taken. So if you want to hear more from Sandra Astabaras, please attend this evening. I'll be there. Some friends will be there. For more information, call 978-342-8522, or you can email jewishheart@cfaith.com. Again, 978-342-8522, or email jewishheart@cfaith.com. Again, at Night to Honor Israel, Sunday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the Faith Christian Church in Fitchburg, Mass. To hear Sandra Astabaras. Portion of the week.
Parashat Emor. The Torah tell us this week in Parashat Emor. You shall not desecrate my holy name. Rather, I should be sanctified among the Bnei Israel. I am God who sanctifies you. Whenever a Jew acts according to the Torah, especially in public, he causes God's name to be sanctified. Why is that? Because when an onlooker sees a Jew acting properly according to the beautiful ways of the Torah, then the onlooker is himself encouraged to follow in the way of the Torah. How God can sanctify us, or how God sanctified us? We've been created in the image of God. Our lives are holy, and therefore, this is how God sanctifies us, his followers.
And we are Rachel and
Sonia.
This is Israel, Israel. Our theme song, Hinei Matov, is by myself, Rachel. You can find it at rachelmusic.net, rahelmusic.net. We're on the air every Friday, 10 to 11 in the morning on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You can hear it on the internet, wsmnradio.com. We thank our guest, Sandra Astabaras, who will be with us again next week to speak about Gaza. Please tune in. It's a very important interview. And you can find her also at www.cfoic.com. Christian Friends of Israel Communities.com, CFOIC.com. The music is by, you've been hearing today, is by Yonatan Miller from his newest CD release, Jewish Soul. We heard that interview last week. You can hear it on our archives at www.israelisraelnh.com. And you can get his album at www.cdbaby.com/Yonatan Miller. Again, to see Sandra Astabaras in person, the Night to Honor Israel at the Faith Christian Church on Sunday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m., 40 Boutelle Street, Fitchburg, Mass. And you can call 978-342-8522 and email jewishheart@cfaith.com. We are Israel, Israel, the free voice for Israel, coming to you from WSMN 1590 Nashua's News and Talk. And we wish you a
Shabbat Shalom.
Shiru. Sihu bechol neflotav Shiru lo Zamru lo Sihu